Hello and welcome to this episode of Macro Sutra, the first one in the new financial year. So first of all, a happy new financial year to you. And now what we're going to discuss is how the previous financial year has been. We have full year data for the entire financial year, or if not, then we have 11 months of data. But we have a very clear idea of how the economy has done on various parameters. And to discuss all of this, of course, we have Radhika Pandey, Associate Professor at NIPFB. Thank you, Radhika, for joining us, for going over the data and for explaining all of it to
Thank
us.
Thank you, Sharad.
So now, Radhika, let's start with the all-important manufacturing sector. How has it done over the year and what's the latest number telling us?
So if we look at the manufacturing sector, you know, in the first quarter, there was a problem. And then what we saw was that there was a improvement in the manufacturing sector GVA, the gross value added,
right?
What we discussed earlier. And manufacturing sector got a boost due to easing of commodity prices. So commodity prices eased and that resulted in improvement of the gross value addition in the manufacturing sector companies. And that resulted in improvement in their balance sheet position, gross value addition improving, but there were some concerns about the volumes. So while the gross value addition was improving, the volume of production, that is the index of industrial production, there were some concerns in the initial part of the year. But overall, when we see the entire year, IIP has done reasonably well. There has been improvement in the volumes of production also.
Okay.
While there are some, you know, if we look at sector-wise, consumption goods production has been a problem,
right?
But then primary basic industries, infrastructure production, that has done well as compared to the other variants. But
of
overall,
course, that would be because of the government push for infrastructure.
Yes, government's push. So overall, manufacturing sector has done well due to different factors.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, it was the GVA improvement coming from the easing of commodity prices. But now, if we look at the latest data, which is, one very important proxy is the PMI index for manufacturing, which is the Purchasing Managers Index. It's a survey-based variable to assess the strength of the manufacturing sector. It has grown to 16-year high value of 59.1. So it's a very strong growth. And the encouraging part is that this growth is driven by increase in the demand for new orders. So when there's increase in the demand for new orders, and that is propelling the index, that is a positive sign that shows that there are improvement in demand conditions, and that should lead to improvement in capacity creation. Because when there is an increased demand for new orders, both from domestic market as well as export markets, that bodes well for the sector as a whole, and that paves the way for creation of capacity and higher private investment.
Right. And in general, the PMI, it's a somewhat forward-looking survey, right? Because
Absolutely.
The purchasing managers are the people who are in charge of making all of the purchases, the inputs that the company needs for its output. So if they are saying that, they need to buy more inputs, it's because they're projecting that their demand for their output is going to grow. So if the PMI number is high, then it says that in the near future, activity is going to pick up. So that's a good sign.
Absolutely. And even the other, to corroborate this, the other activity variables like steel consumption, other activity variables, capturing the state of the economy, they are also picking up both from the manufacturing side as well as the services side.
Right. And so now we're talking manufacturing and services, and the next thing that comes to mind then is our trade,
right?
Exports and imports. How has that been over the year?
So exports have been a cause of concern, mainly because of subdued growth in our trading partners.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about this, that in some of the months of the just concluded financial year, exports suffered contraction. But we saw in February that there was an improvement in exports. It rose by almost 11%, the merchandise trade. But on the other hand, services exports have been doing quite well. And slowly we are seeing that the services exports are gradually catching up with goods exports.
Right.
And therefore, overall, that is resulting in a better current account position. So our balance, the current account balance is in deficit, but the deficit is not very high. It is sustainable. And for the recent data we have for the December quarter, there the CAD, the current account deficit, was 1.2% of GDP. It has come down. And overall, it is expected that for the year as a whole, the current account deficit will be even lower than 1% of GDP. So that is a good position. And that's mainly because, firstly, services exports are rising. And on the import front, because of the decline in commodity prices, as compared to 2022, there has been an easing of commodity prices in the last financial year. Even though our import volumes are higher, but the value of imports are low. So that has resulted in improvement in our trade deficit as well as current account deficit. So that sums up the overall position of exports.
Okay. And now, still keeping an eye on the external world, looking at foreign portfolio investments coming into India, they come in and then they flow out, in and flow out. Yeah. But what's the trend been like for the full year if we look at the whole?
Yeah, so for the full year this time, the FPIs, the foreign portfolio investors, have been net buyers of debt as well as equity. If we take the full year, there were some months where the FPIs did a lot of selling. They sold Indian assets and went back, and those were those months where the US dollar index rose exceptionally high. The US bond yields were very high, so those were the periods where we saw reversal of the FPIs from the Indian market to the advanced economies market. But overall, the key highlight of this year has been FPI's renewed interest in our debt segment. Normally, it is the equity segment that drives foreign portfolio investments in Indian markets. But this time, if we see the monthly data of the entire financial year, in each of the months, FPIs have been net buyers of Indian debt. And that's an encouraging trend. And that got a further momentum in the second half of the year, when there was this news that Indian sovereign bonds will be included in the global bond indices. So that gave a fillip to FPI investments in debt. They, you know, wanted to do investments and then see what happens when FPIs finally, when the bonds are finally included in the global bond indices. So there is an improvement. There is a renewed interest in the Indian debt market, in Indian government bonds as well as corporate bonds. And the positive implication of that has been that the bond yields have come down. And that's a very good news for the government borrowing program. That's a good news for corporate bond. And we have seen that there has been a sharp surge in bond issuances also this
By the private sector.
Right. Because, other than just relying on banks, they are issuing a lot of bonds into the market because the yields have come down. The cost of borrowing has come down. So that's the position on the FPIs.
Okay, and now coming to a somewhat painful topic for all of us, which is inflation. Inflation, we know, has been higher than the RBI target for a long time now.
Right.
But over the last year, has it started trending downwards?
So if we see, you know, the average inflation for the 11 months of data that we have, the average inflation is 5.4%. It comes to 5.4%. And it's mainly driven by food inflation, which came in at 7% average for the 11-month period. But on the other side, core inflation has been trending downwards in each of the months of the financial year. And so overall, on average, core inflation was just 4.5%. But if we look at the, you know, the last 3-4 months data, core inflation is even below 4%. So we have a kind of a diverging trend between the two key components of inflation, food inflation remaining elevated. On the other side, fuel inflation is declined. Right. Core inflation has declined. The other components, you know, the miscellaneous and other clothing and footwear, housing, there the inflation has been sticky at around 3.5% to 4.5% overall average. So mainly it is the food inflation story, and we have talked about this during the course of the year that, you know, erratic weather conditions have led to a spike in food prices, and generally cereals, vegetables, spices and pulses, these have witnessed strong double-digit growth in inflation.
Yes.
So that's the inflation assessment. And in the next financial year, the projection is 4.5% by the RBI. And mm-hmm. the MPC for this financial year, the first MPC meeting is already on way as we speak.
Right.
So we will see what happens and whether they lower their projection of growth or inflation. But overall, it is expected to be 4.5%. But there are both upsides and downside risks to this. The upside risk is that now suddenly we see that oil prices are again rising. Oil prices have now touched $90 per barrel. On the other side, the projection of a normal monsoon is a good news for food prices. So that's we need to be watchful about the inflation trajectory in the coming months.
Right. And why she mentioned core inflation also is because things like food and fuel have a huge effect on India's inflation numbers, the overall numbers. So it's always useful to see how inflation in the rest of the economy, when you take out food and fuel, which is what we call the core, how inflation there is moving. So basically the thing is that core inflation is coming down, food inflation is high, fuel inflation is starting to rise. So, I mean, these are things that we need to watch out for. Now coming to stock markets.
Right.
There's been a lot of turbulence in global stock markets.
Absolutely.
But India seems to have been resilient.
Yes, India seems to have been resilient mainly because of domestic investor base. We have seen that, NSE's, if we look at the returns, that's one summary indicator of the market performance.
Right.
If we look at the return, which is the index value of the closing, the last day of financial year over the last day of the previous financial year.
Right.
So that shows that there is a return of almost 25% to 26%, which is quite a decent return. And if we look at the data, barring aside the pandemic year, this is a very high return. We have not seen these numbers in the recent years. So it is a good performance, and various factors could be attributed for this. One is that, initial public offerings this year has been great for IPOs. Number of companies tapped markets. Retail investor participation has been rising.
Mm-hmm.
Despite FPIs going in and out, the domestic investor base has kept the markets resilient. We see now that the total number of DMAT accounts have reached 14 crores or even more. Even women DMAT account holders are growing at an encouraging pace. So mm-hmm. that shows the resilience and stability of that imparts stability to the markets. And also that in mutual funds, in the equity funds, a lot of investments are being made. So that will propel even companies to tap markets even in the coming year. So we are seeing these factors imparting resilience and Indian market being one of the best performers among the emerging markets.
Okay, so I mean that's all very good news, but I am possibly coming to areas where there might not be such good news. The two engines of our growth, one is of course household consumption, and the other is investment by the private sector. So let's take household consumption first.
Yeah.
How has that been?
Yeah. So that's a problem, and that's even reflected in the government data. If we look at the advanced estimates that mm-hmm. were put out by the National Statistics Office, we see that consumption is likely to grow only at 3% in the financial year 2024. And this contrasts with more than 10% growth in the gross fixed capital formation. So it's an investment-led growth, not consumption. And even if we look at multiple indicators other than the GDP numbers,
mm-hmm.
we see uneven trends, we see mixed picture. Like, for example, car sales are rising, but that's only powered by SUV sales rising.
Right.
If we look at on the other hand, two-wheeler sales have done well this time. But if we look at, reliance on MNREGA, which is again, shows some kind of distress, because when the rural population doesn't get adequate lucrative employment opportunities elsewhere, they tend to rely on MNREGA, and there, while the demand for work has come down as compared to the last year, still number of households and individuals are working under the scheme, and it is still above the pre-COVID level.
Right.
So while it is below the pandemic year, the number of persons employed under MNREGA, but it is still above the pre-pandemic level. So we do see some kind of stress, and also, as I said, production of mass consumer goods items have not been picking up well. So that is another indication of uneven growth in consumption.
This is what you mentioned towards the start of the episode, where you're talking about manufacturing sector.
Right.
This area is not growing that well.
Yeah, so overall in the IIP, if we look at the various constituents, so IIP consumer goods production hasn't done as well as compared to the other constituents from the use-based side, like primary goods, infrastructure, capital goods. They have done better as compared to the consumer goods production. So consumer goods production hasn't picked up because there is a problem with demand.
With demand, right. So now coming to private investment, how has that done in the year? I know that there's not been a lot of good news, but are there green shoots?
Yeah. So overall, if we look at the growth narrative, what has been driving growth, we have spoken that it's the public investment which has been the main driver, and private investment has been shy in taking a a front running position as regards investments are concerned. But this might be changing, because if we look at the recent data on CMI CapEx, which shows the number of projects announced, that has seen a big spurt in the quarter ending March. So that's a very encouraging position, because it shows that 11.3 trillion rupees worth of projects have been announced in the March quarter, which is the second highest across any quarter that we have data for.
Okay.
So it was March 2023 that where we saw 16 trillion worth of investment proposals, but that was because of Air India's purchase of aircraft. So that was mostly enhancing your existing capacity rather than fresh capacity creation.
And skewed by one company.
But this time around, it's much more balanced. It's much more driven by smaller investment proposals. And the good part is that the private sector has taken the lead, and it's driven by sectors like chemicals and electricity. So that is one indicator that we can see. The other is that, the credit to large industry has finally started to pick up. You know, it bottomed out towards the around August, September, and it's seeing some pickup. Again, it needs to be seen whether it picks up. And the third important indicator is the capacity utilization, which is announced, which is released by the RBI, which again shows that, there is a inching up towards the 75% mark, which paves the way for fresh capacity creation. So it has, the capacity utilization has touched 74%. So these are three discrete variables that gives us hope that, yes, there are green shoots of recovery in private investment.
Well, hopefully, these project announcements actually pan out, and these companies actually invest, because we do really need that engine of growth to actually start firing again. Not everything can be pushed by just government expenditure. But now, when I talk about the review of the economy over the last year, of course, there's a lot of interest from our viewers, and it shows itself in the number of questions that we get. So, Gautam asks, what do you feel about the economic situation of the world as a whole, with the amount of debt of all the countries having gone beyond 100% in a lot of cases? Do you agree with the argument that the world economy was kept on a ventilator using low interest rates during the low interest rate regime after 2008? And where do you think that we're headed in the next year?
Yeah, so this is a problem, the high debt and high deficits. And we've spoken about this, that in many countries, advanced economies in particular, the public debt to GDP ratio is above 100%. We spoke about Japan, where it is even higher than 200%. And a lot of it was being maintained because of a low interest rate regime. Right. But now we see that interest rates are higher. Even though there are indication that interest rates would start cutting, central banks will start cutting rates, but they are still elevated, and that will have implications for the interest servicing, the servicing of the debt. It would lead to higher interest costs. It will also could lead to financial stability implications, because a lot of banks are investing in government bonds, because there is a nexus, and this is something which has been time and again raised by this problem has been raised by IMF and World Bank. It's the sovereign bank nexus, where banks are investing in government bonds. Mm-hmm. And therefore, if government bond interest rate goes up and down, that will expose the bank's balance sheets to interest rate risk.
Right.
And we saw that in March of 2023, some of the banks in the US face this problem because of exposure to government bonds. So, and when the bond, the debt is higher, it will have problems for the government in bailing out banks as well.
So,
and also it will have implication because then your fiscal capacity will be constrained. You do not have enough buffers for developmental activities. So all in all, that will constrain the growth prospects in the medium term.
Right. Okay. And now coming to a more micro issue, Sankalp asks, shouldn't the government do something specifically for the airline industry? Air travel is no longer a luxury. In fact, it has become a necessity, he says. Some airports overshadow the world's best malls, yet most airlines continue to be in red. Instead of focusing on extra infrastructure, won't it be prudent to help airlines break into the green, he asks.
There are some structural problems with some of the airlines, but in principle, government should not be intervening in the affairs of airlines. And for
especially
example,
now that all of them are private sector.
Yes.
If Air India had been with the government, then maybe it could step in. But
yeah, exactly. So in principle, it's not prudent for the government to interfere in the affairs of private sector airlines. They should be improving their affairs. There are different level of problems in different airlines. For example, recently we are seeing some problems with Vistara,
right?
Because of crew unavailability, because of some concerns with the crew facing problems with the impending Air India merger. So there are these problems. But overall, at a macro level, if we look at the number of passengers being handled at the airport, that's going quite well. So that is something as a services sector. Overall, at a macro level, we don't see much of a problem. Some of the airlines are not doing so well, but then some of the others are doing well. So that is an internal problem which the government should not be interfering in principle.
Right. And also, please read a story by Yutika Bhargav where she talks about how not only are the number of passengers growing, but they're also the share of the regional airports, the non-metro airports is also growing. So the whole airline industry is diversifying, it's growing, is doing quite well. And I agree, it's not for the government to step in and help out particular companies. So now Sankalp has another question. It has to do with the exchange rate. He asks, at what level would the rupee-dollar exchange rate start worrying us? Many economists have flagged that the US dollar might be overvalued. And could you explain why countries like, you know, war-torn Armenia or countries like Mexico and Georgia strengthened against the dollar, while a more stable country like India has actually weakened against the dollar?
So the problem with Armenia, Georgia, there the issue is something else. There a lot of Russians left their country and moved to these countries to avoid the threat of the Russia-Ukraine war. And they took their savings along. So there was an influx of investments into these countries that led to an appreciation of these currencies. So that was a very unexpected consequence of the migration of Russians from their own country to these neighboring countries.
Right.
And that resulted in an appreciation of these currencies against the dollar. As far as India's currency is concerned, we've seen that, you know, it's more or less stable. If we look at this financial year as a whole, rupee has dipped by 0.9% against the dollar from March 23 to March 24.
Right.
And that has been because RBI has been intervening a lot, and it has been intervening on both sides from to prevent excess of rupee appreciation as well as to prevent rupee depreciation. So both sides there have been interventions, and that is reflected in our foreign exchange reserves also, that we've seen our foreign exchange reserves rising by more than $64 billion in a span of 1 year. So that means that rupee has been kept within a range because of Reserve Bank of India's intervention.
Right. So now, there you go. I'm not going to go over each and every indicator that we talked about, but overall, the picture seems to be a good one, a picture of hope, a picture of optimism. There are green shoots of private sector investment coming in. Inflation, especially core inflation, seems to be under control. Our current account deficit is also in control. the various parameters that are showing very promising signs. There are, of course, some signs of concern. Things like consumption still remain a concern, but overall, the picture looks good. On that note, that's all we have for you. Thank you so much for watching.